Many years ago, I was privileged to hear a lesson. And it was a lesson that hit me deep. It was a lesson that impacted me on that day. And it's been 5, 6, 7 years, and I'd be telling you a story if it didn't impact me every single week. I'm just an average Joe up here. But when Dave and Chris asked me to do a lesson, or asked if I wanted to do a lesson, I knew what lesson I wanted to do. So if you would, turn to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. If you're not a Bible flipper, if you're not familiar with the text, we're going to be spending our whole story here, our whole morning, in Mark chapter 5. So if you can find your way there and follow along the story, it's an incredible story about a man. And 2 weeks ago, Joe Smith asked us a question about Jesus. And it was a raise your hand question. And he asked us if we believed that everything that Jesus did, said, done, his miracles, if there was a purpose involved in that. And there was a lot of hands raised. And the example Joe gave was that he sailed across the Sea of Galilee. And he went there to see one man. And he healed that man. And he got back in the boat. And he went back across the sea. And that's the story we're going to be looking at here this morning. So Mark chapter 5, verse 1. They went across the sea to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons of his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the city and the countryside. And the people went to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told all about the pigs. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. And as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Question: have you witnessed anything like this before in your life? I have. I saw it growing up when I was a kid. I see it where I work. And I've seen it in my home. I see it at the soccer field. Not last season. I've seen it this season. And I hope you'll agree with me before the end of the lesson that you've seen it too. And in fact, you see it all the time. If Mark chapter 5 was a photograph, I'd say that it's a mosaic photograph. And I believe we had one of those pictures in our foyer a couple years ago. And if you stood across the foyer and you looked at this picture, you would see these two arms and these two hands overlapping each other. And one of the arms was the arm of an elderly woman. And the other one was the arm of a young little lady. And it was a beautiful picture. But if you walked really close to the picture and you got really close to it, what you would see would be dozens, if not hundreds, of pictures of us, of family members throughout the years that have worshipped here. And so that's what I think Mark 5 is. It's a picture of pictures. So this chapter to me is a photo story. It's about framing life for us. It serves to give us another viewpoint into what's really going on in front of us. Here's what I mean by that. We have this man who's possessed of these demons. Now, I have not seen any demon possession, or at least I don't think I have. But I have seen what I believe is the purpose of that, and that is this. That when you take wickedness, and you take evil, and you take our sin, and you embody it, and when you turn it into a person, it shows the end of where sin will lead you. When you see a person that shows the end of where sin takes you, you know who we find? We find this man here in Mark chapter 5. We find a man in spiritual bondage. It said he had an impure spirit in verse 2. We find someone that's living, but not really. He's living in a cemetery. He's living in the tombs. He's living with the dead. He's a walking dead man. Now, is that kind of like how sin is? Or is that how sin is? I mean, sin separates me from God. It separates us from God. And the consequences of that, it's a walking death. And here we see that in this man. Here's a man that's out of control, verse 3. No one could bind him anymore, not even with chains. Now, does evil do that to you? Have you ever had a habit that just got out of hand? Have you ever been in a situation in life where it was just out of control? Well, it was for this man. Here's a man that is a nuisance. Verse 4. He had often been bound, chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons of his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Sounds like he's hurting other people to me. A menace. So people just stay away from him. You know what sin does? It makes you hurt other people, doesn't it? It makes you bring this destructive sin in your life into theirs. And into their space. And into their doorstep. It makes it where people don't want to be around you anymore. And this man's a prime example of that. Here's a man that's helpless. No one was strong enough to subdue him, verse 4. Nobody could help him. Nobody could do anything for him. He's restless constantly, night and day, verse 5. He's not sleeping. Sin will have that effect, doesn't it? Sin will keep you up at night, won't it? The weight of the things that you've done on your shoulders, the things you're ashamed of, guilt, that'll cause you not to be able to sleep. And this man's living in that. It'll make you isolated, verse 5. Among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out. He's unhappy. He's crying out all the time. And it even says he's cutting himself with stones, verse 5. Have you seen that guy? Do you know that guy? I'm pretty sure I've been that guy. And if you read this text long enough, I'm pretty sure you'll come to the same conclusion. Makes you want to look in the mirror. Just double check. This isn't the guy that you are. Because the picture's given here so that we understand this isn't the guy. This isn't the man. This is the woman that you want to be. And the thing that this man experienced, and it's something that we all have the opportunity to experience, is that the fixer came for him, and his name was Jesus. The only one who could do something. This is life. It goes on every day. It's all around us. And we might not see it in this monstrous of a picture here with this man, but this is a picture of our world. And we've got to see it. There's another picture here, and I want to jump toward the end of the story where the herdsmen, they run into the countryside, and they want to tell everybody what's happened. And I don't know what they said, but they want the people from the city and the country to come. And when those people arrive on the scene, they're in his right mind, enclosed, is that guy that they all recognize. He's the old guy from the tombs. Look, that's him. I know it's him. There's the guy that when you travel the hillside, when you travel where the pigs are, and you hear that guy screaming out, there he is. And he's reasonable. He's clothed. He's in his right mind. He doesn't have any chains on. And he's sitting at the feet of Jesus. And these people walk over to the cliff, and sloshing around in the waves are thousands and thousands of pigs. So the herdsmen, they're pointing at this man. They're pointing down at the pigs. They're pointing at this guy. And they're trying to explain everything that took place. What Jesus said, what the legion said back to him. And when they get done, so, surprisingly, the people come to Jesus and they ask him, "Would you please leave?" And so you know what he does? He leaves. It happens every day. Every day. God does something. It's something that we ought to see. It's something that we ought to look at and go, wow. God is real. He really does love us. He really is involved in our lives. He really is connected to the things that's going on in our day-to-day life. Somebody changes. Something changes in front of me. I don't want any of that. I don't want change. You go away, God. So these people miss Jesus. They miss the Son of God. This is the second picture here that I think is what sin does to us. It's not as outrageous as the picture of the man. So it's not as obvious. It's a nice sin. It's a sin that you can commit and maybe nobody know about it. It's a sin that you can commit and you can keep your family, keep your friends, keep your job. But it's the same thing. It separates me from God. The picture of these people. Here's the people that are self-seeking, all about themselves. You know what they see when they see this man and the pigs? They see what they lost of value. They see the money that's gone. They see the man that Jesus healed, but they see what it cost them, and they don't like it. Here are people that are heartless. It's astonishing that nobody goes up and squeezes the guy and says, "We're so glad you're healed." Now, maybe there were no people. There were his people around. Maybe he had no wife, no siblings. I doubt it. Maybe there were no parents in that area. But maybe there wasn't. But you think that somebody would be cheerful over this occasion and somebody would celebrate. But nobody does. These people are covetous. The pigs to them are worth more than the man. Of people that are faithless. If Jesus can transform this man, what could he do for them? You know, why don't they see that? Or why can't they see that? And there's no connection between what they see and what the herdsman told them and what Jesus might do in their life if they would just embrace him. Here's the people that are shallow. They just react to life as it happens. And that happens every day. A people that are senseless, blind, oblivious to what's really going on in their world. And so they just miss Jesus. They just miss the Son of God. Is that a reality? Do you think that really happens? Do you think that happens today? I think that happens all the time. I've not only been the first guy, I've been these people too. And in fact, I might be these people more often. Which of these pictures repulses you more? Is it the man that's demon possessed, or the people that are possessed of covetousness and selfishness? I mean, who's really a slave here? Let's move to the miracle of the story. Let's move to the middle. And I think you'll agree that this goes on every day too. Question, who is responsible for the pigs? Who drowns the pigs? Was it Jesus? Or was it the demons? It says in verse 10, he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area, and a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, send us among the pigs, allowing us to go into them. It was the demons' idea. They thought of it. That's what they wanted. But look what it says in verse 13. He gave them permission. Such an unusual exchange between these demons and Jesus, isn't it? They want to go into the pigs, and so they ask, and Jesus says yes. And so they go into the pigs, and the impure spirits came out, went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned. So who was it? Who's responsible? Well, it was both, wasn't it? I mean, the fact is that both are part responsible and played a part and had a hand in what happened here. And can I say that's another thing we need to see of what's going on in our life every single day? And it doesn't matter if you're across the room looking or if you're all the way up close trying to find some detail, trying to look for some sort of clarity, all right? Both God and Satan have some kind of hand in what's going on in our world every single day, every single moment. In answering the question, who's responsible, I think we need to ask ourselves some questions to make this text more real for us. The herdsmen. What are they going to do more? They're out of a job. Their paycheck's gone. And if these are family men, they've got a bit of a trial on their hands, don't they? And those pigs belong to somebody. And what about the shop in town that takes the pig's feet and just chops them off, puts them in jars, pickles them up, sells them? You know, what about the local corner shop that serves the only bacon in Decapolis and the fine dining restaurant that serves the loins to the most elitist garrisons that can afford it? There's that lady that gets the skins, makes the boots, makes the footballs for the kids. And then there's that family that gets the scraps, gets the ears and dehydrates them for the local dogs, and that gets the tusks, makes jewelry and sells it. It's 2,000 pigs. That's a lot. Did you know that two pigs can reproduce into 24 little piglets in a single year? And the average would be about 12. And so that's 12,000 to 24,000 a year of pig harvesting for these people. That's a mighty impact to these people. We've got to see that. We've got to convert this large number of 2,000 pigs into something that we can relate to, something in our lives, something that might connect us a little more to this story. Somebody doesn't have a job tomorrow, and somebody can't serve food to stay in business. More families can't sell feet, can't sell footballs, can't sell jewelry, can't sell pig ears. And there's a lot of people that's going to be hurt by this, and it's just a ripple effect. And do you see that in just a few minutes, the city, the economy in this land has been shaken? And who's responsible for that? Isn't that the kind of question that really tests a person's faith? Aren't those the kind of questions that give us trouble? Who hurt the economy? Was it God or was it Satan? What about human trafficking? Diseases? What about the next war we're going to see? What about the stock market? What about natural disasters? What about all of that? Who's behind it all? Well, I know from the story that God has a hand in it and Satan has a hand in it. Now, their strategies are miles apart. The strategy of the demons is crystal clear, isn't it? They want to make this guy... Jesus wants to make this guy better. Jesus, you can have this guy. Nobody cares about him. We'll take the city. You can have the guy. The demons aren't interested in the pigs. They're interested in the people. They don't mind if one man invites Jesus into his life, as long as the whole town asks him to get out of town, which is what we read about here. But God, He's so much smarter. He's so much wiser. He's so much more. Jesus knows, and that's part of His strategy, He knows He doesn't have these people to begin with. You see, sending the pigs off the cliff into the sea didn't all of a sudden just turn these people into self-seeking people. Didn't all of a sudden just turn them into unmerciful people. They were already that way. All Jesus did was expose it to them. And He did that by taking stuff of value away from them. And I need you to ask yourself the question, does God do that today? Yes, I believe He does. He lets us have some pain. He lets us have some trials. He lets us have some hurt. So that maybe we wake up. And maybe some of these people woke up the next day when they didn't have a job. And they couldn't serve food. Or they didn't get their food. Another part of Jesus' strategy is He has shown these Gerasenes His power. He has shown them His compassion. And it's a power and a compassion that He would show to them too. Maybe someday they'll think back on that day that they were drug out of the city and they got to see all them pigs in the sea and they got to see this man finally wearing clothes and they got to thinking, wow, that was incredible. I wonder what He can do in my life. The ending of the story is the best part. There are three people that asked Jesus for something here. The demons asked, the people asked, and the man He healed asked. So Jesus is getting into the boat. In verse 18, the man who Jesus healed was begging Him. They all begged Him. And the funny thing is that everyone got what they wanted except for this man. The demons wanted to go into the pigs, and Jesus said, go. The people wanted Jesus to leave, and He left. And here's this man, and looks like he got pretty good odds so far. And he asked Jesus, I want to come with you. I want to get into the boat. And Jesus says, no. You can't get into the boat. Verse 19, key verse. Go home to your people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how He has had mercy on you. Who are His people? Is that a job you want? Who are His people? They're the people that are selfish. They're the people that would rather have the pigs than His healing. They're the people that didn't come up and hug Him and celebrate His transformation. Who wants that job? Who wants to go talk to these people? But that's the job Jesus gave him. And what I love about that, and what we should love about that, and what we need to see here in this story, is Jesus reimbursed the people for what He took away from them. He gave them something after He took away the pigs. He gave them a preacher. He gave them someone that'll work on them. And we got to see that strategy. That is strategy on God's part. And every day, when they see the man that used to live in the tombs walking down the street, they'll know who he is. This guy's got an infamous past in this area. They'll know. Look, brother, there's the guy who we used to hear screaming when we were kids, trying to sleep at night. We could hear him up in the hills. That's him. I know that's him. Look. He's still back to normal. He's still with us. And he's still doing what he's been doing lately. Telling us about that man Jesus that showed up for that one day and left because we asked him to. I think we should consider this man's past as just an incredible tool for conversation. You know, he's not going to be better than anybody. On a social ranking, he's going to be very low. He's going to be the lowest of the low. And so when he approaches people, when he exchanges words with people, he's got to have this humbly approach. He's going to have this lowly approach. Because listen, this guy was rock bottom. And he's going to be able to share that. And I think that's a tool that this guy's going to have. And I think that's a strategy on Jesus' part. And I think that's a strategy from before he got into the boat and sailed across to Galilee to find this guy. And we got to see that. The Lord has turned this guy into a stick, so he can poke at these people and change these people over time. And I see that happening today. I see people that have God in them, poking people around them. And that leads me to know that God is right in the thick of it and what's going on in our life. And the thing that the demons get on this occasion, and we have got to understand that we get today, is what this text is really all about. And I tell you what it's not about. It's not about the pigs. It's not about the economy. It's not about the money. And it's not about football. What it's about is people. And what it's about with these people are their souls. And that's what God cares about. And this text here shows us that Satan cares about it too. He cares about the souls. And so we got to decide who we're in it with. We got to decide who our soul is going to be in it with. Because every one of us make a choice in that. I don't know what this man said to people when he shared the Lord with them. But maybe he said this: Jesus is my Savior. And I was filled with sin. I was being led astray by demons. I was in chains. And I was all alone. And then Jesus came. And He loved me. And He cared for me. And He broke my chains. And He took my whole life. And He put everything where it needed to be. And I wanted to leave you behind and go with Him. And He told me I couldn't. And He told me to stay. And He told me to find you and tell you Jesus is my Savior. And He wants to be your Savior. And if He's not your Savior today, I wish He was your Savior. Come to Him as we stand and sing.